The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Quite a lot to get to on today's program. I'd like to, in the next segment, just follow up a little bit more on what we discussed yesterday about just this unprecedented abuse of power at the DOJ and at the FBI, this raid on Michael Cohen's home and his office. And even the hotel room that he was staying in, that happened on Monday, of course. President Trump had a strong reaction to that, as we covered on yesterday's show. And we'll just follow up on that again coming up in the next segment. First, I wanted to begin with just one segment or clip, rather, from the hearing yesterday with Mark Zuckerberg. He got quite a lot of publicity, his testimony, before some congressional hearing. Of course, there were quite a few clips that made a few headlines. Ted Cruz, for example, that really did expose just how biased that social media platform is. I mean, they do have an agenda. They do take sides as far as politics is concerned. And Senator Cruz did a good job of exposing that in the brief amount of time that he had to question Zuckerberg. And I thought it was interesting, too, just to hear them. Of course, they're trying to sort this out. I mean, what kinds of regulations do we need? Zuckerberg talked often about this community that he and his assistants have created and that they want to make it safe. And, of course, everyone has a different definition of what's safe or what should be allowed because of free speech or whatever. And who's to police it, ultimately? I had a class this morning for doctrines where we just talked about just how much of a free-for-all it is when you do away with the law of God. If there's no absolute standard, if there are no absolutes, if there is no higher authority that defines what is right and wrong, I mean, how are you to know? The Bible talks about it being as, well, everyone's just doing what seems right in his own eyes, just carnal human reasoning. Certainly not reasoning together with God, but as you've heard on this program over the years, we've talked a lot about our young people and how much they're suffering because of the broken family, because of the broken educational system, and because so many of them are addicted to devices, to social media sites. That just came up briefly yesterday. As far as I know, this was an exchange between Senator Sass. I think he's from Nebraska. He's the senator, by the way, that wrote the book, The Vanishing American Adult. It's a pretty good book. I haven't read through it cover to cover, but I've gone through bits of it for research. But at one point in the exchange yesterday, this is Senator Sass asking Mark Zuckerberg about the impact or the adverse impact of social media on our children. Here's clip six.
As a dad, do you worry about social media addiction as a problem for America's teens?
Well, my hope is that we can be idealistic but have a broad view of our responsibility. To your point about teens, this is certainly something that I think any parent thinks about, is how much do you want your kids using technology? At Facebook specifically, I view our responsibility as not just building services that people like, but building services that are good for people and good for society as well. So we study a lot of effects of well-being of our tools and broader technology. And, you know, like any tool, there are good and bad uses of it. What we find in general is that if you're using social media in order to build relationships, right? So you're sharing content with friends, you're interacting, then that is associated with all of the long-term measures of well-being that you would intuitively think of: long-term health, long-term happiness, long-term feeling connected, feeling less lonely. But if you're using the internet and social media primarily to just passively consume content and you're not engaging with other people, then it doesn't have those positive effects and it could be negative.
So that's Zuckerberg yesterday talking about, well, saying that the technology, the tools, it can be used for good or bad purposes. And he's right about that, of course. But if you look at what he and his staff have in place as far as regulating Facebook or what these politicians want to put in place, and you know that if the government gets in there and they meddle with Facebook, they're not going to have the solutions either. The answers, I mean, to these problems, which in headline after headline after headline, just like the Daily Mail the other day, young people here in the UK suffering from depression. Pupils, students in primary schools suffering through all kinds of eating disorders, panic attacks, suicidal thoughts. I mean, these kinds of stories come out every single day. And here you have all the adults, of course, one of them, wrote a book titled The Vanishing Adults, the Vanishing American Adult. You have all these adults trying to fix the problems with our young people. And really, in that answer that you just heard, aside from pointing out the obvious, that it can be used for good or bad purposes, there are no solutions to these many problems that we're seeing in the family and with our young people. The Telegraph said the other day, young people struggle to cope with setbacks as happiness falls to lowest level in a decade. Here's the creator of Facebook talking about how we've done studies. It's so wonderful. If you just use it the right way to try to establish social contacts, it's healthy. It's good for you. Well, that doesn't mean that it can't be used for some good, I suppose. But young people, they're struggling to cope with setbacks. Happiness is falling to the lowest level in a decade. Why? Why, with all of this technology, all these advances, all of this wealth, all of this prosperity? In the previous story, that Daily Mail piece, says the teaching union research suggests that problems such as depression are developing at ever younger ages. In one case, a teacher described how an 8-year-old pupil climbed onto a roof and said that they wanted to kill themselves. 8-year-olds. This other article, The Telegraph, talks about one study saying that the research found that happiness and confidence and emotional health had dropped to the lowest level since 2009. The Daily Beast had a story last week that said Generation Z is already bored by the internet. It says teenagers today have unprecedented access to technology, and yet many report that they've never been so bored. They're bored, silly. Today's teens say they'll sometimes open and close up to 20 to 30 apps, hoping that something, anything, will catch their attention. Why is there this void, this depression, this lack of happiness in the lives of so many of our teens, so many of our children, opening up one app after another, just hoping something will catch their attention? It says, when I'm bored, this is quoting a teen, when I'm bored, while I'm on my phone and I'm switching between different apps, I'm just searching for something to do, said Addie. She's a 15-year-old from Long Island. It's like walking around your house in circles. And so the article says here, often they don't find anything that's entertaining or to hold their attention, so they just zone out or they daydream. Another one says here, sometimes I feel like I've seen everything there is to see on the internet. That's a 15-year-old from here in the UK. I'll circle around on different sites or apps. Sometimes I feel like I've reached the end of the internet. I mean, there's nothing left to see. After circling around in this vast wasteland, that's what 99% of it is. What do you suppose our youths, our young people, for the most part, what do you suppose they're viewing, they're consuming in their Google searches or on YouTube or in Facebook? There's another piece here that I got just today, The College Fix, talking about the state of young people on college campuses and just how situationally confused they are. They lack intellectual curiosity. Of course, sexual promiscuity, that runs rampant. That's the only thing that college administrators refuse to police. Nothing about behavior, about the way of life, about the way that you're living. You see how it's exactly upside down. How different it is at God's College. We just started back in with classes today. Our young people had a couple of weeks off, not to go to Fort Lauderdale or somewhere in Mexico to party for 2 weeks, but to observe the spring festivals, the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread. And now we've come through those festivals and we're back at it. In college. Gals living just in the girls' dorm. Guys living among other guys. Taking Bible classes along with other liberal arts training. What a difference. It says two veteran academics who have diagnosed different plagues in modern higher education have little optimism for young people entering college for the foreseeable future. I mean, there's really nothing to be optimistic about here. Senator Sasse asked a decent question, and Mark Zuckerberg answered in the way that, any technological guru answers. Hey, it's good. Now, of course, there's some bad. You've got to take the bad with the good. And meanwhile, no one discusses the family breakdown right across society and the impact that it's having on the next generation. This article from the College Fix, it says, in fact, higher education has become profoundly unintellectual. And student life has become about accumulating gold stars. Just tell them they're doing a great job. Just tell them that we really want them to step up and take the lead. Like you saw following the Parkland massacre. Hand it over to the young people. It quotes this scholar later in the piece, saying that students can't think for themselves because they don't have time. Think about that. Think about that. As it relates to these other stories, they're so bored that they're going back and watching the same YouTube videos over and over again. And at the same time, they don't have time to pursue after something that should make them intellectually curious. They just don't have the time. It says here, a professor who made his name in 2005 by shining a light on the anarchic and often dangerous sexual environment on campus, meanwhile, warned that college students' sexual behaviors are just as degraded as the intellectual undertakings. So it's a vast wasteland, whether you look at it academically or whether you look at their sexual behavior. It quotes, again, some other authors here writing about the dorm brothel. This author, I think he also wrote something in the Christianity Today publication, But it says here that he lamented the end of single-sex colleges as a great tragedy, claiming that many problems, even today, would not exist if even just dormitories were single-sex. When he was a student in the 1970s, no one thought unisex dorms was possible. He believes colleges are unreformable and that any attempt at reining in the problem of sexual libertinism will only cause more problems. Well, that's someone that's just remarking on how different it is today than it was just a few decades ago. At our college, at God's College, well, the very first class, one of them, is called Principles of Living. And we go through Herbert Armstrong's book, The Missing Dimension in Sex. And he, in that book, Herbert Armstrong talks about the basic reason for our society's gross immorality. It's human nature. Human nature. That attitude or influence that comes from the devil. Mr. Armstrong said human nature is a pull. It's like the power of gravity. It pulls in the direction of vanity and greed and self-love and the spirit of competition and hostility and resentment, hatred. He said that's just the natural tendency or attitude of man. It's a constant pull. He also said it's the way that just comes naturally. Just go with the flow. Go with the flow of everyone else in the college environment or everyone else that has a phone and a laptop. Just follow the crowd. It's interesting, he said, Mr. Armstrong did, this is on page 150, why all this violence, this immorality? Here's the cause, human nature. Human nature, which is vanity without any purpose and absence of parental training and discipline. Now that would have been a real shocker to hear something like that, whether from a senator or from Mr. Zuckerberg yesterday. Well, look, it's a tool. It's technology. It can be used for good or bad. But given what we understand and know about human nature, we better teach our children about God's purpose. We've got to train them up in the way that they should go, as the proverb says. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. We leave our children to themselves, and it brings us, it brings our families, it brings our society to shame. I downloaded this article the other day, an article from, it's from one of the old Tomorrow's World publications from back in the early 1970s. And the content of it is about developing the mind and self-discipline, things of that nature. It has several points that it goes through about proper education. And just one section in particular that comes to mind, just having gone through this material this morning, is a section on teaching your children. Of course, there's a lot in the Bible, in the book of Deuteronomy and elsewhere, Ephesians 6, Exodus 20. About teaching your children, the Proverbs, as I just read, teaching your children in the way that they should go, making sure that they are developing educationally. Just one little snippet here from this 1971 article. It says, acquire your education with a high purpose in mind. Acquire it in order to glorify your Creator and to qualify to join his son in ruling, in teaching, in rebuilding this world, and enforcing peace in the world tomorrow. That is education with vision. That's the solution to the many troubles, to the many problems caused by human nature, which is vanity, without any purpose, an absence, a total absence of parental training and discipline. When we come back, we'll follow up on some of what we talked about yesterday, America under attack. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
It's been 5 or 6 years now, I think, since my father came out with his booklet, the first version of his booklet, America Under Attack. And as I noted yesterday on the program, it's pretty amazing to think that, I mean, given all that we've said and written about this attack on America from the very top, that you would then have the sitting president of the United States come out on Monday and talk about our nation, America, being under attack. I played some of this clip for you yesterday, but here's what clip three. Here's what President Trump said on Monday.
It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for.
It's an attack on the country. This unprecedented abuse of power. The DOJ and the FBI, I mean, fully revealing themselves to be these partisan institutions or agencies that have one set of standards for their political enemies and another for their allies. There's quite a few prophecies that talk about a lack of justice and judgment in the land. Think about Habakkuk chapter 1. We talked about that when we were going through the lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages. There's just no just judgment. Isaiah 59 says much the same. You're not going to get it, not in today's society. Judgment is turned away backward, and justice stands afar off. The truth has fallen into the street. You just can't find the truth. Everyone has your truth. Everyone has your version of the truth. That's a line from the new movie Chappaquiddick. All right, this tragedy happened. Here's how we get out of it. Here's the version of the story we present. I haven't yet seen that movie, but hopefully it'll make it over here to the UK soon. It looks fascinating. It's some history that well, quite a few Americans, younger Americans in particular, are probably unaware of. It took 50 years to tell that story on the big screen. 50 years! I mean, this problem with major media, it's not just something that's emerged in the last year and a half. How destructive. Speaking of destructive institutions, look at the major media today. Cheering on this unprecedented attack, as my father wrote, in Saving America from the Radical Left, temporarily, that's last week. We posted that at thetrumpet.com. He said, Satan is marshaling every tool and weapon that he can to wreck this nation. And he's having alarming success. He said, Donald Trump is a man with serious problems, but the radical left is relentlessly waging war against the president and leading the country to destruction. That's what's happening, and yet no one sees it. No one's concerned about it in media. No one's concerned about it in government. No one except Mr. Trump, I guess. He can at least see that this is an attack on the country. This is an attack on our fundamental institutions. I didn't get the chance yesterday to just go through that section in 2 Kings 10 and well, the chapters that follow about Jeroboam too. But as I mentioned in that article that my father wrote, he makes some comparisons there between Jeroboam II and the office of President Trump today. Let me just read a few verses. This is from 2 Kings 10 and verse 29. It says, "Howbeit from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin, Jehu departed not from after them, to wit, the golden calves that were in Bethel and that were in Dan." So, I mean, just backing up to chapter 9, God told Jehu to cut off the house of Ahab as punishment for Ahab's sins and Jezebel's sins. And Jehu, following through on that, killed Ahab's family and removed the Baal worship from Israel. But notice what verse 30 says, "And the Eternal said unto Jehu, because you have done well in executing that which is right in my eyes, and have done unto the house of Ahab according to all that was in my heart, your children and the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. But Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of the Eternal God of Israel with all his heart, for he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, which made Israel to sin." Jehu did not depart from the ways of Jeroboam. He embraced the religion of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. It says, "And in those days the Eternal began to cut Israel short, and Hazael smote them in all the coasts of Israel." So this was in the last days of Israel, ancient Israel. Israel that went into captivity soon after this. After Jehu, you had Jehoahaz, and then Jehoash. And then just switching over to 2 Kings 14, you come to the reign of Jeroboam II. His reign was around the time of 793 to 753 B.C. It says in verse 23 of 2 Kings 14, it says, "In the 15th year of Amaziah the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam the son of Joash," so here's another Jeroboam, "the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria, and he reigned 41 years." So this Jeroboam II, I mean, he had the longest reign in the northern kingdom. There was a certain amount of stability during his reign, during these last days for Israel, anciently. It says in verse 24, "And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Eternal. He departed not from all the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin." So he went along in the same spirit as the original Jeroboam, who made Israel to sin, as it says there. But that said, I mean, this period under Jeroboam too, well, verse 25 says, "He restored the coast of Israel from the entering of Hamath unto the sea of the plain, according to the word of the Eternal God of Israel, which he spoke by the hand of the servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, which was of Gath-Hepher." So Jonah came along and delivered this prophetic warning about Nineveh and so on, but he also prophesied, as you can see there in verse 25, that Jeroboam II would expand his power, the power of Israel, to some of the cities that had been lost to Syria. And really, under the reign of Jeroboam II, Israel became more powerful than it had been since the days of Solomon. Now, it was still in a sinful state, as I just read from verse 24. It still followed along after the same old rebellious traditions of the past. But there was a momentary resurgence. God said, I mean, look, we're in the last days now. God began to cut Israel short after Jehu. Well, then comes Jehoahaz, then Jehoash, as I said. But then when you get to Jeroboam II, I mean, you have a 41-year reign. Fairly stable. Some growth. And as I say, my father in the article that was posted last week, he talks about the temporary resurgence in the United States. He writes, "Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It's quite something to behold, him resisting these anti-American forces." He says, "When you compare what this president is doing to what his predecessor did, there's been a clear change in direction, one that will slow the speed at which America is being pulled apart." It's just going to slow it down some. It's not going to fix everything. It's not going to make America great again. But it says here, he's not trashing. This is Trump. He's not trashing the Constitution as the previous president did. And that's the truth. I mean, that's what was going on for 8 years. Trashing the Constitution, undermining the Constitution. And of course, Barack Obama, pretty much any chance that he got, he was admitting as much. I don't like that old Constitution. It's a negative document. And of course, all of his friends in the so-called deep state, well, they thought he was great. They thought he was great as he trampled over the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Well, then, as my father says, along comes Donald Trump. And he wins the presidency, and nobody on the left expected it. And there is, perhaps, as he wrote in Great Again, conditions in America may improve for a short time. We're not talking about a 41-year improvement, like under Jeroboam II, but for a short time. You're certainly seeing, as he wrote in the article from last week, the destruction of the supreme law of the land. President Trump is slowing the speed at which America is being pulled apart. But still, you have to look at the course that we're on. The course. Verse 26 says, "For the Eternal saw the afflictions of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Eternal said, not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash." How merciful is God? Here they were just going along after the way of Jeroboam, the first Jeroboam, the same spirit, the same pagan idolatry, the same human traditions. And even still, God had mercy on the people of Israel for a time under the rule of Jeroboam II. What would God do if people in the United States en masse turned to him in repentance, obedience to his laws? What would God do if people all of a sudden started to emphasize and uphold the true doctrines of the Bible, the truth about the Sabbath and the holy days? Well, verse 28 sums up his reign, his rule, Jeroboam II. He was the last Israelite king to receive a direct warning from God, from God's prophets. Jonah, Hosea, Amos. We've talked before about Amos 7. There were a handful of other evil kings to follow Jeroboam II, but most of them had a very short-lived reign, and most of them came to power by some form of violence, murder, or less noble means than ascension to the throne. Some of them even fought against the brother nation of Judah. And they all ended up paying tribute to Assyria. And then ultimately they were conquered and led away captive by the Assyrians. That said, I mean, there is a temporary slowdown of this prophesied destruction of America being ripped apart. As my father said in that article last week, leftist radicals hate the Constitution. Barack Obama has stated explicitly that it's an outdated document and criticized it for being a charter of negative liberties. Don't like the law. I don't like the law of the land. It says liberals in academia, the media, and in government don't believe governing officials should be restricted by the limitations imposed by the Constitution. America's founders imposed those restrictions to prevent tyranny. To prevent tyranny. To prevent the abuse of power. But what happens? What happens when you see sin? When you see sin spreading all across the nation, like cancer, it's the sins of the people that bring about these curses. My father said, finally, our Constitution makes America different from any nation in the world. The protections afforded by the Constitution have allowed God to bless this nation tremendously. They prevent a dictator from seizing control of the nation's unmatched resources. But see, the founders also understood that unless all of this was underpinned by religion and morality, it wouldn't work. And look at what we're seeing today. As I mentioned yesterday on the show, when you look at what happened on Monday, this raid on Michael Cohen's house and his offices, we're entering into a very dangerous time for the United States of America. I played this clip for you. This was yesterday. Let me just play a bit of it again, clip two. This is Alan Dershowitz, the left-leaning lawyer or attorney who spoke on Fox News on Monday night, clip two.
This is a very dangerous day today for lawyer-client relations. I deal with clients all the time. I tell them on my word of honor that what you tell me is sacrosanct. And now they say, just based on probable cause, even though this was cooperation with Cohen, they can burst into the office, grab all the computers, and then give it to another FBI agent and say, you're the firewall. We want you now to read all these confidential communications. Tell us which ones we can get and which ones we can't get. You know, if this were the shoe on the other foot, if this were Hillary Clinton being investigated and they went into her lawyer's office, the ACLU would be on every television station in America jumping up and down. The deafening silence of the ACLU and civil libertarians about the intrusion into the lawyer-client confidentiality is really appalling.
That was Dershowitz on Monday talking about just how dangerous this direction, this movement, this investigation this ever-widening investigation. And then last night, I mean, he took it a step further, saying that this was unconstitutional. This was not lawful, what happened on Monday. Here again is what Dershowitz had to say on Fox last night. Here's clip four.
Well, you can't just go and sweep up all lawyer-client privileged information and then give it over to some FBI agent or a low-ranking U.S. attorney and say, well, go through it. And the stuff that isn't privileged, turn over to the prosecutors. The stuff that is privileged, well, you can read it and you can study it, but you can't give it to prosecutors. The Fourth and Sixth Amendment don't just protect against use of evidence in a criminal trial. They protect privacy. Imagine if instead of going into lawyer-client privilege, they tape recorded a person's confession to his priest or rabbi, or went into somebody's home and recorded conversations with his wife, or conversations between a doctor and a patient. The lawyer-client privilege is as sacrosanct as that, and there has to be a very, very good reason before any prosecutor should have a right to look at any such material.
That's Alan Dershowitz last night on Fox. Yesterday on Fox as well, here's another scholar. Here's another attorney, a constitutional expert. He says this on his last name's Turley. I forget his first name, but here's clip one.
I think the president's right in the sense that whenever you have a raid on an attorney's office, it should raise very troubling concerns for everyone. I mean, this is a serious problem when someone can't rely on their attorney.
That's Jonathan Turley yesterday on Fox. Troubling concerns. I mean, the president's right to sound the alarm on this because it's a serious problem. I mean, look at the uproar over Facebook. A fair bit of it is the information, the private information that just gets distributed all over the place. I mean, and like the last line of defense is the attorney-client privilege, the privacy that's protected by the Fourth and Sixth Amendments. We're looking at these bedrock institutions of the United States of America. They're crumbling before our eyes. We're heading into this dangerous period of lawlessness. Every man doing what seems right. In his own eyes. Dershowitz wrote at the Hill. I mean, some of these comments, again, he's made on TV. He says, civil libertarians should be concerned whenever the government interferes with the lawyer-client relationship. Clients should be able to rely on confidentiality when they disclose their most intimate secrets in an effort to secure their legal rights. A highly publicized raid on the president's lawyer will surely shake the confidence of many clients in promises of confidentiality by their lawyers. And then he goes on and talks about again, well, what if the shoe were on the other foot? I played that clip already. Where is the ACLU? Where are all the civil liberties, these groups? You don't see them. You don't see them because, well, it's their enemy that we're going after and everybody's got to be on board with it. And you look at what President Trump and his administration, what they're going up against, a radical left-wing media. Of course, their opponents in the Democrat Party, an increasingly radical leftist party. And there's quite a few even on the conservative side, or at least the Republican side, who hate Donald Trump. And then he's got the FBI and the DOJ. And he's calling them out. He's saying this is an attack on America. What would it be like had he not won? My father touches on that in that program, or rather that article. What would it be like? There was an article at the Federalist about a month ago, a month and a half ago, about the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And it just takes you through some of his history when he used to be the FBI director. Specifically, the anthrax attacks back in 2001. This is right around the time of 9/11. And following 9/11, you had these anthrax attacks an attacker sending them through the mail. I think it killed four or five people. And on one of the letters, the terrorist wrote, "Death to America, death to Israel. Allah is great." But instead of pursuing the obvious, even then, 17 years ago, Robert Mueller's FBI went after a guy named Stephen Hatfill. According to the Federalist, he was a flag-waving American who had served in the Army and had dedicated himself to protecting America from bioterrorist threats. The Federalist said in February there was no direct link from Hatfill to the attacks, but the FBI, by the FBI's own admission, and the Bureau never charged Hatfill. The FBI did, however, spy on, follow, and harass Hatfill nonstop for years. The Department of Justice also publicly outed Hatfill as the possible terrorist. So they tried him in the media, just like they're doing with President Trump. He's a terrorist. Yes, he's a flag-waving American, but he's the one that did it. He's the one behind it. He's the one the FBI spied on. Well, he wasn't the one. And he ended up suing the FBI, and he won something like $6 million because of it, because of this unjust attack brought on by Robert Mueller's FBI. And following the judgment, following this tremendous waste of taxpayer funding, following the $6 million payout, Bob Mueller said, "I do not apologize for any aspect of this investigation. None of it. I offer no apology. I have no regrets. Never mind that I wasted away years of this innocent man's life. Nothing. No apologies." The Federalist says the investigation was an unmitigated disaster for America. Mueller didn't go after Al-Qaeda for the anthrax letters because he couldn't find a direct link. But then he targeted American citizens without showing a direct link. And for his deeds, he had the second longest tenure as FBI director ever, and was roundly applauded by nearly everyone. And that continues to this day. This is the man now running the Trump-Russia investigation, and he, judging by media reports from the beginning of this investigation to now, he can do no wrong. He is a saint. Donald Trump is the villain. That's the narrative. That's what they'll continue to push in the media. And this is all brought on because of our own sins. Speaking of parallels, like what you read about in my father's article from last week, there's some pretty stark parallels, too, between what's happening to the United States right now and what has happened to an entire era of God's church, an era that fell away from the truth by reason of transgression. It's because of sin. It's because of lawlessness that this cancer spreads. Listen to this. I saw this yesterday, but then someone sent me the clip again today, so I decided to pull it off the shelf. But this was from Stephen Colbert's show Monday night. He's the late night comedian. And here's the reaction of the audience upon learning that the FBI had raided the home and the office and the hotel of President Trump's attorney. Clip 5.
"Today, on a tip from Mueller, the FBI raided Cohen's office, seizing records related to several topics.
By reason of transgression, the sins of the people." I mean, that's why we see what we see happening. Look at what's happening to our young people. Look at what's happened to our families. Look at what's happening to our nation. I mean, you might have someone at the top right now who's slowing it down just a little bit, but look at the course we're on. Look at where we're headed. What did God say following the reign of Jehu? I mean, these are the last days of Israel. It's about over. It's about over for Israel. In those days, the Eternal began to cut Israel short. Well, those days have begun here in these last days. And the only way that we can get it right with God is if we uphold and promote and emphasize and abide by the laws of God. In looking at what happened to God's church, the Laodicean era of God's church, here again, it's by reason of transgression. There's a prophecy in Malachi 2 about an end-time Levi. God says, I made my covenant with him. He feared me. It says in Malachi 2, verse 6, the law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, or lawfulness. And he did turn many away from iniquity, or sin, or lawlessness. Who is turning many away from sin today? And yet you go back and look at Herbert Armstrong and see why God had such a high opinion of that man. He led a righteous life. He observed God's laws. He turned people away from breaking the law. He turned people away from lawlessness. My father wrote in the Last Hour book, he said the bottom line of why God was so pleased with Mr. Armstrong gets down to law. That's at the root of what it means to do God's work. It means turning people from lawlessness. That's what we're about. Now, you have to have the God family vision. You have to have the vision first, like 1 John 3 says, and then the law, and then the understanding of, well, we have to purify ourselves. We have to be cleansed from all impurity. That's a lifelong process, and we need the power of God to do it. We need God's power, and we need God's righteous laws. Look at Ezra 7. We went through it this morning in class. But read that chapter, verses 6 and 10 in particular. Here is Ezra the scribe. I mean, he loved to study the Word of God. He was a ready scribe, as it says there. He was skilled in the law. He copied the law. It's not like he was coming up with it himself. It wasn't human reasoning. It wasn't Ezra deciding what's right and wrong. He just got grounded in God's law. God was his judge. God had final say. And it was the same with Herbert Armstrong. We want to be keepers, preservers, seekers of the law. But like it says in that prophecy, Malachi 2, verse 8, it says, but you're departed out of the way. You have caused many to stumble at the law. Verse 9 says, therefore have I also made you contemptible and base before all the people, according as you have not kept my ways, but have been partial in the law. You've been partial in the law. The Revised Standard Version says that these false ministers, they show partiality in their teachings. They're respecter of persons, in other words. They don't respect the truth. They're not seeking the truth. They have a respect for persons. And even when they get it wrong, even when they get it catastrophically wrong, I mean, there's no apologies. There is absolutely no repentance. Just charge forward. Destroy people's lives, accuse them unjustly. That's what we're seeing We saw it happen in God's church, and we're seeing it happen in the United States of America. Now, as my father brings out in that article, this is not to say that President Trump is a perfect man. It is to say that the United States is being destroyed from within. It's under attack. If you haven't gotten to it already, please go to thetrumpet.com and download America Under Attack. Great again. And then, of course, you have the most recent article that my father wrote on Jeroboam II, temporarily saved, or how did it word it? I'm looking on my notes here. Saving America from the radical left temporarily. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.